through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Seahawks jump right back into first place in the NFC West thanks to a loss by the Rams, but also their 23-17 win over the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's figure out how we got here, though, with our plays of the game, starting with the Seahawks on offense. So Philadelphia goes three and out. Fantastic. You've got this long 7-minute drive by Seattle that includes 5 first downs. It stalls, though, when 4th and 2, this happens.
Carson in the backfield. The toss to David Moore is going nowhere. They tried to run that sweep again, and Barnett had penetration, one of the defensive linemen, penetration inside, and just that thing went to heck in a handbasket before it ever got started.
Heck in a handbasket. Jake, I love the decision to go for it here. Love the aggressiveness. Why didn't this work, though?
Well, it didn't work for a couple different reasons. One, there's just a lot of moving parts. I'm not a huge fan of pulling guards and pulling tackles and everything along the goal line. I think there's just a lot of things that can go wrong in that situation instead of being downhill. But the main reason was because DK Metcalf had to block a defensive end here, and that's all part of the design to get Dwayne Brown around the edge. Typically, when you have a tackle that pulls, defensive linemen are taught to look inside. That, hey, you've got a pull and you might have a trap that's coming in. What ended up happening there was the defensive lineman or the defensive end just went straight up field, making it a pretty much an impossible block for DK Metcalf. The play was really blown up from the very get-go, had zero chance of working there. And I just thought they got a little too cute there on the goal line on fourth down. And not putting the ball in Russell Wilson's hands in that situation, or Chris Carson's for that matter, I thought was a huge mistake. And one that, again, another play that would have completely changed the way that we're looking at this game today offensively. They finish that drive and cap it off. We're feeling a lot better about it. But I just thought that was one where you got a little too cute. And before that, Pete Carroll calls a timeout on that fourth down as well, so you're burning the timeout there.
Yeah, I hated everything else about it except for the decision to actually go for it. Decision to go for it was brilliant. I don't like the idea of doing anything except for, I agree, handing it off to Carson. I almost would have preferred that over giving it to Russ. I know that Russ has been phenomenal this season, MVP type year. I get it, but Carson early looked like he was making an impact, and it just would have been nice for
him.
He
looked great.
Get that momentum going, and you know. Hindsight is 2020. We know that the Seahawks ended up with just over 75 rushing yards. Heading into the game, though, you knew that the Eagles' defense was 25 against the run, allowing 130-plus yards from running backs. It would have been pretty tempting for me. Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer, though, opt not to go with that. Eagles get another three and out by the Seahawks' defense, which is fantastic. Here's what I did like, Jake. You have another drive by Seattle. They take over with 5 minutes left in the first quarter. They have 4th and 2 again, and they decide to go for it again, but this happens.
Hide out of the backfield. Russell steps up in the pocket. He goes down, and it's Barnett who got to him, and for a second time, the Seahawks are not going to be able to convert.
And guess what? What happened before that? You called timeout.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where you're just second-guessing yourself, and here in cut number four, Pete Carroll talking about how he didn't like his own handling post-game of the fourth down decisions and calls.
I didn't like my handling of it, the timing of it down there. I handcuffed the guys a little bit, that one. And neither one of them worked, you know. so if we worked and converted, then it would have been better. But just we lost all of whatever momentum we could have had in the first quarter by not getting scores, you know, and converting and getting, you know, just getting the – completing the sequence. So I just didn't like it. I was pissed at me.
So what he means by handcuffing his guys is he meant by the timeouts. And so to me, that directly reflects on, in that situation, getting nervous about the call that Brian Schottenheimer made, looking at the defense and saying, oh, I don't know if I like this. I'm going to call a timeout. This is a big situation. We need to make sure we get this right. To me, that's where you have to trust your coaching staff. You have to trust on what you prepared for all week. You have these calls, you have go-to calls in these fourth and shorts, in these fourth and goals that you go to, and you have to trust them to execute it. And that was one aspect about it early on that I didn't like. And again, you convert those, yep. you feel very differently about this game.
Now, at this point in the game, it is still scoreless as we wrap up the first quarter. Seattle dominating the time of possession, so it doesn't actually feel like a close game or a game within reach for Philadelphia early at all. Seattle holding the ball for 10 minutes, 45 seconds, 1 of 3 on third down. They also have a couple first downs in there. Philly with -4 net yards, so didn't feel at all close pretty early. Finally, their first drive of the second quarter, Seattle gets into scoring position, and it's all thanks to this pass to DK Metcalf.
Third down and 13. Here comes a blitz this time. Russ looks. Now he's going to let it fly. Got a man out there. Metcalf makes the catch at the 5. He's down at the 1-yard line. The Seahawks needed to open things up, and they did. Russell saw single coverage, and nobody throws the deep ball like Russell Wilson all the way down. Inside the 5, a 52-yard reception. DK Metcalf, welcome back to Philly.
Now, Jake, we're going to get to Chris Carson's touchdown. That was my favorite play slash score of the game. But this might have been the most important because Seattle needed to just get into gear, right, to finally get into scoring position. That was enough fun and games in the first quarter. You actually need to put up some points now. And we'll get to it in a second. They did, but a lot of it was thanks to this play on 3rd and 13, Jake. What did you make of DK Metcalf's reception here?
Well, I thought it was tremendous. I mean, when you talk about, you know, DK's reception on that post route, he was able to get behind the defense, and Russell was able to buy some time. They actually went into cover zero there, the Eagles did, and it's the first time I've seen them make somebody pay deep. They've been traditionally so good at this early in Russell Wilson's career of getting over the top of defenses when they try to pressure and bring cover zero. They were able to get to this, and DK making somewhat of a contested catch there to set them up for a score that they really, really needed at this point.
And that score, by the way, this touchdown by David Moore.
Carson just to the left of him in the backfield. The play fake. Russell's going to lay it up over the top to David Moore, who makes the catch. It is in. Touchdown, Seahawks. I love seeing 83. Catch touchdown passes. David Moore, back corner of the end zone again. A perfect pass by Russ. And the Seahawks this time inside the 5. Pay it off with 6.
Jake, the goal line fade, a controversial, polarizing decision. It works out for them. Did you like it?
I did like it. I mean, you got David Moore, who's a bigger bodied, who's a guy who is very good at going up and getting the football on Avante Maddox, who has really struggled in his career versus bigger receivers. So I thought this was a great, great call here. And this was really a run pass option that the Seahawks do at the goal line that's so difficult to handle. So Russ had the ability to hand the ball off to Chris Carson or pull it and throw this ball. And he saw the mismatch, took advantage of it. And David not only went up and caught the ball, but David Moore also snatched it away from Avante Maddox to where he had no chance to try and make a play on the ball. Very well executed.
And then we have the Philadelphia Eagles, again, getting nowhere after that touchdown to David Moore. Seahawks take over, and they're able to score again with this physical, bulldozing Chris Carson run.
The handoff inside to Carson. He finds a hole across the 10, down to the 5. He's driving! He's in! Touchdown, Seahawks! Chris Carson! Holy smoke, carried half of the Eagles' defense on his back and scores. The Seahawks go up 13-0. Beautiful hole for Carson up the middle, and he was off to the races. And then it was all Chris Carson's second, third, and fourth effort.
It's been an interesting year for Carson, Jake, because he has both proven that he does have an injury-prone issue with him, but he's also proven he is your best running back, not just on your team, but one of the best in the league. This is the type of physical, just bulldozing run that separates the best running backs in the league from the rest of the pack, and Chris Carson is one of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is, and did you see how fired up Pete was after this touchdown?
This is exactly what he wants.
He loves him some 32. He loves him some Chris Carson and the way that he runs so physical, and it's these style of runs that are right there. You know, he is wrapped up and hit at the 5-yard line and drags everybody in the rest of the way. I mean, that's just effort. That's physicality. And Chris Carson's having a nose for the end zone. And quite honestly, one of the things that I saw last night as well offensively was they had more success spreading the Eagles out offensively and then running the ball than they did, you know, lining up in 12 personnel and heavy personnels and trying to run at the Philadelphia Eagles. I wish they would have done a little bit more of that. But Chris Carson, so efficient on the night. He was clearly on a pitch count. Eight carries, 41 yards, over 5 yards per carry. He just looked outstanding, and that touchdown was one of those moments where you thought that, okay, the Seahawks, they have a chance to really run away with this thing, Stacey.
Now let's next talk about Carson Wentz, quote, incomplete pass, and what clearly is a missed call on intentional grounding.
At the 36, snap goes past Wentz. He picks it up back at the 40, being chased, still being chased, throws it out of bounds. Ball is caught on the near sidelines by a coach for the Seahawks. And it ends up being just an incomplete pass as he was out of the pocket, although nobody was in the neighborhood for Wentz.
There's no foul for intentional grounding. The quarterback was outside the pocket, and the ball went beyond the line of scrimmage.
Jake, the ball did not. The ball did not go beyond the line of scrimmage. It is an objective fact.
It went nowhere near the line of scrimmage. Nowhere near. I mean, you just look at whoever the staff member that for the Seahawks who ended up catching that ball on the sidelines. He is literally 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Use your eyes. I have no idea how the refs blew that call so bad. I mean, like, that was one of the worst calls I had seen. And quite honestly, the referees had some questionable calls throughout the game. Questionable pass interference calls, I thought, both sides. But that was the worst call that they made all night by far. And it was frustrating because as a defensive player and as a team overall, you were clearly in command of that game. You were dominating that first half on defense. And to have them be rewarded with a cheap play like that, that is beyond, beyond frustrating.
Let's talk about that reward. It's this touchdown and cut 18.
Motion, pump fake, Wentz looks. Now he's going to throw to the end zone, touchdown Eagles. Goddard makes the catch, and Goddard is in for the touchdown for the Philadelphia Eagles. Goddard now with his third touchdown reception of the season, and it's a 14-6 ball game.
Now, Jake, be objective here because I'm having trouble figuring it out. I need you to be objective for me because I was so mad at this missed call. Would you blame that score primarily on that missed call, which you would have had a loss of down and presumably a spot of foul, or would you blame it on mistakes for an otherwise good day from the defense?
I'm going to say mostly due to that blown missed call because that's a huge factor, right? But at the same time, the reality is you did not handle tempo well. The Eagles changed up their tempo. They went into more of a 2-minute offense, and it worked out well for them. They were able to get themselves up and down the field. And what we've seen over the year, Stacey, is that this defense has not handled themselves very well in those 2-minute situations. That's something that they need to improve on. But I think that missed call has more to do with it than does the drive itself. Because, again, they forced Carson Wentz during that drive into a bad decision, into a bad play, and that ultimately is how you respond at the end of it. And so that's why I come back to it. And I understand that some people might point to certain things and be frustrated with this game.
Yeah,
I get it. But at the same time, I don't. This defense pretty much dominated the game outside of one or two plays.
Speaking of them dominating, Seahawks offense gets the ball to start the third quarter. We're moving into the second half now, and they're a little anemic to start. Seahawks defense instead on the field for the Eagles' first drive of the third quarter. It's a bit of a long one. They start getting some first downs on the move, but instead on 3rd and 10 at the Seattle 17-yard line, Jamal Adams is in it for the sack.
3rd down and 10. Ward shifts over from left to right. Play fake inside. Wentz is being chased, and he goes down. Jamal Adams gets there all the way back to the 25-yard line. Another sack. That's the 4th one of the night. And this one goes to Jamal Adams as he comes off the corner, and Wentz didn't have a chance.
What'd you make of his day overall, Jake?
Oh, man, he had an outstanding day. He had an outstanding day. Jamal Adams really making his presence felt. And, you know, Mike Salk talking about how you have to question maybe Jamal Adams and the decision that's in front of you in terms of whether you sign him or not because this secondary's played bad. Well, yeah, I get that. But he also missed 4 games during the season, and he has 6.5 sacks. He very easily, Stacey, could have over 10 sacks this year as a safety. So whatever, you know, whatever things that are going wrong in the secondary or have been going wrong, they're starting to change, they're starting to turn, they're starting to go in a positive direction. But he is made up for that with his playmaking ability, with tackle for losses, quarterback hurries, and quarterback sacks. He has more than earned his keep here, in my opinion. And that play right there was crucial. Third down, they needed a stop. That was a big-time, momentum-changing play there.
Absolutely agree. Seahawks takeover. Jason Myers hits a 44-yarder to make it 17-9. And, Jake, keep the trifecta alive. The three-time 17-9 score. Unfortunately, though, that doesn't last forever. We're about to get to Jason Myers' second field goal. Before we do that, Seahawks back on the field. DK Metcalf, who for a minute there looks like he might be injured. He's off the field for the first play of this drive, comes back on the field. Russell Wilson finds him for 31 yards.
Play fake, here comes the rush, and Russell's going to throw deep over the top. Got a man out there, reaching up, making the catch. Guess who? DK Metcalf over the top of Darius Slay. I might be a little bit sore, but who cares? Because I'm a Megatron. I'm going to reach up and catch this perfectly thrown ball with one arm over Darius Slay for a big first down. Are you kidding me?
Careful, Raves. Don't let DK hear you on that one. You want to be really careful there. Also, Jake, I don't know how Slay could have covered this better. I mean, this was objectively a pretty good play by him. Looked like it could be an incompletion. DK Metcalf somehow finds a way to get it done with one arm.
That play was unbelievable. Those are the types of plays when you talk about star receivers. That's what star receivers do. They make those types of plays. They make the impossible happen. And with Darius Slay, you're right. He had great coverage. He was right where he was supposed to be. Played it beautifully, but it doesn't matter. It was a great, a perfectly thrown ball, and it was a well-executed one-handed grab by DK. You thought that that was going to be the capstone to his performance, mm-hmm. potentially, of that game. Unfortunately, it wasn't, because a couple plays later, he gets another one-on-one opportunity. He drops an easy touchdown right through the breadbasket that would have really put the game out of reach, would have sealed the game, no question, would have been the dagger, and would have been an unbelievable night for DK. And I have to say this, Stacey. There were two. So it was that play, and DK misread the go ball earlier in the game from Russell Wilson. He beat Slay, rushed through it right where it needed to be, and he slowed down and then tried to pick back up. If DK just runs through that, that might be another touchdown. DK could have easily had close to 250 yards receiving last night.
Is that a moment?
I mean, that would have been absurd.
Is that a moment where you slow down trying to track it, like to make sure you're in the right spot? I mean, what would be behind trying to slow there?
Well, you're trying to track it and you're trying to seal. So what DK and Tyler do so well is they seal their DB behind them. They'll slow down a little bit to ensure that the DB is not going to make that catch. It's something that's really hard to do and you don't see very often, but those two guys do it extremely well. And so I think he overthought that one a little bit. If he just runs straight through that, uses his speed, he's catching it, and he might be gone to the house. And so those were two mistakes that he made in that game. But overall, this guy, he's an absolute monster.
Could very well have been a blowout, and we're going to keep talking about this offense today. First, though, let's get back to defense. KJ Wright, Jake, he wasn't the biggest name on the field. Jamal Adams took a lot of that spotlight. But KJ Wright had a great day. He had a batted pass to stop a four-down attempt by the Philadelphia Eagles, turn it over on downs, and give it back to Seattle. He also had this sack of Carson Wentz.
Play fake. Seattle blitzes. Carson steps up, and he goes down. KJ Wright gets there. Jamal Adams was there as well, but a host of Seahawks. We'll see who gets credit for the sack. Nobody cares on the Seahawks who gets credit. They just want to put Carson Wentz on his wallet, and they did, and KJ Wright is the man they give the sack to. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sacks for the Seahawks tonight.
Now, Jake, don't just say this to make me feel better as someone, a fellow 80s baby with KJ. Is he getting better with age? Because I think he is. I really do think he is.
KJ, the ageless wonder. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to see how well he has played and how he's played the last two seasons, bouncing back after having an injury in 2018, a knee injury that kept him out for almost the entire season and really put his career trajectory in flux. KJ has been as solid gets for this defense and has really been one of those unsung heroes for this defense amongst all of the chaos. He's done outstanding in his new role. He'll come in and play Will linebacker, but he's done a great job playing on the edge, playing in space, and using his smarts to get sacks, cover the flat, and really can keep containing the run game. KJ has really found himself a huge role, and it makes you wonder what the Seahawks are going to do with KJ Wright after the season, because his contract will be up, so they'll have some decisions to make there.
Now, Jake, there's been a lot of ugliness from the Philadelphia Eagles and the majority, all of the NFC East this year. Maybe nothing has been uglier than this interception by Carson Wentz.
Here comes the rush. Wentz stops, throws to the end zone. It's intercepted, and taking a knee in the end zone is Diggs. No Eagle receiver was anywhere nearby. And Quandre Diggs intercepts it in the end zone. Flaps his wings like an eagle.
I have no idea where he was going for this. In fact, my theory has to be that he thought Diggs was an Eagles defender. Or, as you said, Curtis, the chemistry between them just off the charts.
Can't break them up.
Wentz to Diggs works every time.
it's an unbelievable connection that they have. That chemistry that they have between them, it's unbelievable. But the odd thing to me about that interception is Carson Wentz threw that with such conviction. He didn't look, seriously.
It was a bullet.
I'm serious. He didn't look like he was hesitating on that throw whatsoever. So is Carson Wentz just that off and really seeing things, or did his tight end, you know, really hurt him and run the wrong route? Like that's what I'm curious to know, that we'll never find out. Those are things that will be said behind the scenes in meetings in Philadelphia, but That's one of those situations with Carson that I was just scratching my head going, what are you looking at? What are you doing? There was nobody near that area other than, you know, his boy, Quandre Diggs.
You know, Stacey.
Yeah.
Our quarterback camp is gaining a lot of momentum.
I think
we found our first test case.
Carson
Wentz, come on down.
Come on down to the
we'll get you straightened out.
To the Stacey and Curtis
times.
Make quarterbacks better
desperate
than Jake
Camp. Desperate times call for desperate measures.
LLC. We've already got Yogi Roth agreeing to be a coach. I think it's going to be fantastic. I do want to play one final cut here.
That was a big get.
The last couple games when we've gone through plays of the games, we've ended it. Minnesota was that fourth down touchdown to DK Metcalf. Arizona was Carlos Dunlap's sack. I mean, there's been big plays on both sides of the ball to end the game. But guess what? Let's give special teams a shout-out, because this was Jason Myers' 39-yard field goal to give Seattle its final lead.
From 39 yards out, and this one just sneaks in the left upright. 15 of 15 on the year, 26 straight. Jason Myers extends the Seahawks' lead to 23-9 over the Eagles. And he just has ice water in his veins.
Now, Jake, if Jason Myers in any way misses a single field goal for the rest of the year, I will blame you, because you said he is automatic this year. At the same time, you're completely right.
Yeah, he is automatic, and he has had a bounce-back season. I mean, one of the things that we were concerned about, Stacey, with Myers last year is, was he going to be the 70% field goal kicker that he was earlier in his career? And he just had one random, you know, beautiful season with the New York Jets. The answer is Myers has found himself again, and he is playing at a Pro Bowl level, which is great to see for Seahawks fans. Outstanding season so far for Jason Myers.
The timeline is next. We've got some fun sound coming up, including, and you guys are going to want to hear this, Darius Slay's reaction to his performance against DK Metcalf.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you guys the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines, tweets, sound, clips, everything. A lot of it's going to be funny. Some of it might be thought-provoking. We'll see what we get into today with our first story. Sticking with the Philadelphia Eagles, Seattle Seahawks game, Darius Slay, not thrilled to be answering questions about his performance against DK Metcalf.
Hey, Slay, was there any discussions on the sideline by you or anybody that you know of to possibly get you some more help as Metcalf kept having that big game?
Hell no, I don't need no help. What kind of question is that? Next one.
Okay, so there's two things here. Number one, you absolutely did. You were not able to cover DK Metcalf effectively that night. Number two, you're a good cornerback, and you know exactly, like, it is fair for you to be kind of insulted by this question, because it's kind of a rude, not a rude question. It would be a tough question to hear as a team's lead corner. Like, did you need help with that guy? I'd be like, get out of here. I don't want to be part of this conversation.
It's like when you're, you know, physically capable, but you're like struggling to carry something.
Yes.
Do you need help with that? No.
And you're like, no, I don't need help.
I'm fine, even though you keep dropping things.
Or it's like it's just something where it might be a half truth, but you are too good or established or whatever for it to be assumed. So yeah, you're like, get out of here.
It sounds a lot like Brooke telling me that I need to stop trying to bring in everything from our grocery run, bring everything from the car into the kitchen at once. I take it as a personal challenge every single time. I don't know why. I don't know where this started, but I take it as a personal challenge to see if I can bring in literally every bag, milk, whatever it is, into the house. I do not want to take two trips. And you could call it laziness. You could call it determination. I think that's, you know, Darius Slay and I have the same mentality. No matter what's going on, the obvious thing is right in front of you. You need to take the second grocery. You need to take the second, you know, grocery bag trip. Darius Slay needed some help out on the edge. Mm-hmm. He could not handle DK Metcalf. He wanted to hear none of it. None of it. I mean, could you imagine being one of the game's best at what you do? And you were helpless. Like, the other person across from you was just that much better than you. And there's nothing you could do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, DK is showing that you need to be special if you want to step to me and play one-on-one press coverage. You need to be Jalen Ramsey. Like, that's really the only guy in this league that I think can legitimately fight with DK and win a good handful of those matchups, and he did the first time that they played. I would have loved to have seen DK get some more balls thrown his way to see who really won that battle.
Well, and because of that, and maybe this is because of DK's reaction to Jim Schwartz calling him Megatron, which we'll get to in a second, but I wonder if Jalen Ramsey covering DK so effectively and then DK just in Russ missing some opportunities there is going to fuel DK in the next competition. Like, I am genuinely curious to know how DK is going to play going against Jalen Ramsey in their second matchup, because I don't think he's taking that lightly. He is such an insanely competitive person. I can't imagine how excited he is to, like, prove that Jalen Ramsey can't cover him.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. And that was the same thing that happened earlier this year with Patrick Peterson, right? The first matchup, DK was shut down, didn't get many balls thrown his way. And so there was a little bit of that conversation as well. Is Patrick Peterson have DK's number? And DK came roaring back that second matchup and really won that battle. So I'm very much looking forward to that as well.
Now we'll get to DK's comments about Jim Schwartz. But before I do that, Jerry Jones, a Dallas Cowboys owner, whose opinions are deeply rooted in reality, had this to say about the quarterback situation in Dallas.
I don't know that that Denver had any more of a challenge than we've had with DiNucci or with the young quarterbacks that we've had. And so my point to you is, and so by the way, two or three of those quarterbacks will be back from the COVID.
First of all, the COVID.
Oh my God.
Secondly, Jerry, I want you to listen to me. The Dallas quarterback situation has been dire, but there is no team in this league, no team in the past several years of this league that had as tough of a time as Denver did, as dire a situation as Denver did in that game, because they literally had to bring someone up. Was it a practice squad receiver who used to be a quarterback at Wake Forest?
Yes,
at Wake Forest?
Yes.
No offense, Phil Haynes, to bring someone up to do that. Like, no, I'm sorry. Andy Dalton is an actual quarterback. Ben DiNucci is an actual quarterback. Get out of here, Jerry. Get out of here.
You know what's also funny about this? This is the comical thing about this, is the Broncos, as you said, they had to pull someone up to play quarterback that didn't play quarterback. That's not his profession. Guess what you did, Dallas Cowboys? You didn't just decide that Ben DiNucci was going to be on your practice squad. You made him a part of your active roster. So who are you saying is poor in this situation, Jerry? Is it the coaching staff that evaluated Ben DiNucci and said that he was good enough to be on your active roster? Or is it your own son, Stephen Jones, who accepted that as your GM? So don't tell me that Ben DiNucci is anywhere near what the situation is as the Denver Broncos. That's poor evaluation on your part as the Dallas Cowboys management and coaching staff, not out of desperation to play some other player who has never played quarterback before and has no business playing quarterback at the NFL level. That, to me, was one of the funniest comparisons he tried to make that I've ever heard of. And poor Ben DiNucci, that's a rough one to hear.
Jake, someone on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, before I get to this Metcalf sound, telling you, I can't tell if I hate or love this advice. I don't know, Texter. I can't tell if I want to make fun of it or fully embrace it. Told you to get a broom, and that's how you carry all the bags in one trip. You put them all on the broomstick.
I don't need a broom.
You need help, Jake.
I don't need help. I am Darius Slay. I don't need help. That's a ridiculous suggestion. Get it out of here. I appreciate the thought. I can do it on my own. I can bring in all those bags on my own.
Jake.
I'm grown.
Look.
It's okay to ask for help.
It's okay to ask for help, Jake.
I got to tell you something real quick.
Yeah.
Is it Jackson now, he's 4 years old. Jackson now, he'll help out with the groceries every now and then. And Jackson, when he's picking up the groceries, he may have like the lightest bag possible. And he's bringing it in, and he's like, Dad, I've got such strong muscles. And he's just walking in like, grunting the whole way. He's just like, see my muscles, Dad? It's the best. It's the funniest thing ever.
Do I have enough time for DK, or do I have to save it?
We got time.
Okay, let's get to it quickly. This was DK Metcalf talking about those pregame comments.
You know, I still got work to do. One of the defensive coaches came up to me, and it kind of made me mad that he was like, you know, I was in Detroit with Megatron, but you're not there yet. You know, in my mind, I'm not trying to be Megatron. I'm trying to be me. So, you know, had a little chip on my shoulder the whole game.
Was that Jim Schwartz?
Yes, sir.
It gets me every time because DK was trying to be sly about it, and there's literally only one obvious answer to that, which coaching staff or member for the Eagles has actually been with Detroit, and that was Jim Schwartz, and DK's like, oh, yeah, it was. I was trying to keep it on the low, but yeah, it was. I just love DK's mentality. I love the fact that you have a player who's young in this league who is not afraid to mix it up, who is not afraid to look at everyone else around him and say, you know what, I'm better, and I'm striving for greatness. And if you're going to slight me along the way, I'm going to use that as extra fuel and motivation. He is one of the more fun players to watch on the field, and he's even more fun on Twitter and off the field as well. Love DK. He is truly one of the best human beings, and he is a funny, funny dude.
360, all caps. I don't need a broom. Next question, Jake.
Yes.
You do.
Thank you.
All right, enough fun and games. Let's talk about this offense. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
It's been a fun one, talking about the great game from this defense, talking about a day from Jamal Adams, DK Metcalf. But that doesn't mean everything was sunshine and roses. You did have an off day, a bit of a clunker for the offense. Now, they still won. They were efficient. He had a few pretty good plays in there. But Russell Wilson threw for his fewest yards of the season, just had one touchdown. A different shade of the offense than we've seen from those earlier games. Jake, what in your mind was the biggest issue here? It's hard to think it's anything to do with talent. They've been phenomenal. The execution on some plays was okay. I mean, is it injuries? What happened?
No, I don't think it's injuries. But I do think that not having Brandon Shell out there is an obvious one. Abuehi just has showed last night that there's a reason why he has been a flame out in terms of him being a high first round pick to now being a backup tackle in the league. He did not play very well in this game, and having Brandon Shell back will definitely be an upgrade for them. But you do have to give the Eagles defense credit. They were who I thought they were in terms of their defense.
As to quote
Dennis Green, I thought that this group would play extremely hard. They've shown that on film. They are wildly disruptive with their defensive line. And Fletcher Cox probably had his best game of the season. He was outstanding, and he is a force to deal with on the inside. But what I saw, Stacey, which in my opinion was the biggest reason why this offense underperformed in this game, is what has been my biggest concern when talking about resetting this offense, and also seeing what happened against the Arizona Cardinals. The Arizona Cardinals game worked so well, not because you ran the ball. It worked so well because the running game happened at timely, and it was efficient. And you had Carlos Hyde, who was able to take advantage of a beat-up defensive line on the interior in particular for the Arizona Cardinals, and you had yourself a game. And that's great that you were able to win in that fashion that particular week. But don't forget what the bread and butter is of this offense. Don't forget what's made it so explosive and what's made it one of the more feared units in the NFL up to this point is its passing attack. It's the ability to keep defenses on its heels on first and second down and then be able to add, oh yeah, we're going to have Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde come down and hit you guys right in the mouth with our physical running style as a part of this offense. What I saw was a bit of an overcorrection possibly of this offense, from letting Russ cook to getting back to what Pete Carroll's philosophy is of how to win football games and what ideally his offenses are, which is a run-first-oriented offense. We are going to run it on first down. We are going to run it on second down. We are going to try to out-physical you at the point of attack all game long, and we're going to wear you down. And I think that you look at what happened in that game, and there are moments that you could point to where that happens. And to me, here in cut number four, Pete Carroll really kind of kicking himself for how he handled some of those fourth down calls. I think that's another microcosm of that conversation of overcorrecting.
I didn't like my handling of it, the timing of it down there. I handcuffed the guys a little bit, that one. And neither one of them worked, So if we worked and converted, then it would have been better. But just we lost all of whatever momentum we could have had in the first quarter by not getting scores, and converting and getting, just getting completing the sequence. So I just didn't like it. I was pissed at me.
And they didn't convert, and they didn't, execute those sequences. Because, there was a lack of execution there, first and foremost. But on the other side of it, Pete Carroll getting involved and calling those timeouts in the first quarter that I believe were unnecessary at the time. It was to try and focus on trying to get that call so right instead of trusting your offense, trusting Brian Schottenheimer to make those calls in those moments to execute. And to me, that was just a small microcosm of what I saw throughout the game, Stacey.
Why overcorrect? Like, why is he overcorrecting?
Why is he overcorrecting?
Yeah.
Because after the Cardinals game, Pete Carroll said that to him looked like more like Seahawk football. And that to win in the playoffs, you have to have a physical nature and style to you. And I fully, 100% agree with that statement. However, I don't think it means that you have to get back to running the football down people's throats and trying to, win the battle at the line of scrimmage from the very get-go. And there were moments in time in that game where I felt that it was very evident that they were having little to no success in the running game, and they continued to keep hammering away at it. And it did not necessarily lend itself to positive results. There were shining moments because I thought they were timely good calls, not because they had worn down the Eagles front throughout the game because they were pounding the rock, up and down the field, if that makes sense, Stacey.
Yeah.
They didn't wear down the Eagles. It was a nice call in the right moment. And that's what they have to get back to, is letting Russell Wilson, yes, he had a bad month. He had a bad month of turnovers. Trust your quarterback to reset his mindset that he's going to take care of the football, and he has shown you that he is going to do that from this point forward, and that he's done that over the last two games. But I hope that they don't overcorrect themselves so much that they lose what they had going for them in the first half of the season, which was a dynamic, potent offense that defenses truly did not have an answer for.
It's an interesting kind of philosophical issue for Pete Carroll. This is me, my interpretation reading into it. I mean, who knows if this is really what Pete thinks. He's been one of the most successful coaches at either level of college or pros. So this is just me, a radio person, talking about it. But he clearly believes in being true to yourself. One of his highest compliments he pays other coaches and programs is they know who they are. They know who they are, and they stick to it. Not in a stubborn way, but in a way where they realize their own strengths and find ways to exploit them in different ways. I mean, it's a brilliant way to run a program. And Pete Carroll knows that, and he's got that part on lock. He has this other core principle to his philosophy, which is winning is everything. Win forever, right? And competition is everything. And they used to be very in sync in the early part of his tenure in Seattle, where being true to yourself and true to the kind of football principles that you believed in also helped you win all the time, because you had strong defensive players. You had a great running back. The league was a little bit different at the time. And now I feel like those two things are drifting a little further apart, and it's just fascinating, because it's not that the basic principle of being true to yourself is wrong, or that wanting to win is wrong. They're great principles for building a football program, but what if being true to yourself isn't actually the best way to win a football game anymore, and you need to start changing?
Well, you do need to start changing that a little bit, and I believe that they did that in the first half. Marry the two things together. Pete Carroll thinks that, or I shouldn't say Pete Carroll, it almost seems like it was okay because, you know, you're letting Russ cook out of necessity, not because it's what's best for you. And now that your defense is starting to play better, you don't need to do that anymore. You need to have this more physical, balanced attack. And I think that that line of thinking, and I'm hope I'm wrong here after just watching this game, I hope that that's not what they're leaning into, because you need both. You need the defense to step up and start playing better championship caliber type of defense, and you need the offense to continue to let Russ cook, and you need this offense to continue to be timely in its run game and be efficient in its run game, and let Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson do what they do best. And now you have a dynamic Super Bowl caliber team. And that's what I hope that they build here over the next three games and really work to correct. Don't take the stinger out. Don't take that aggressive nature out of your offense. I think that that ultimately will be a big mistake come playoff time. And I hope I'm wrong, and that they marry the two together rather than saying, we have to, if we play good defense, now we have to start running the ball better. That does not need to be the case.
Yeah, and to his credit, Pete Carroll said he was kicking himself afterwards, so we'll see how they move on for the rest of the season on that side of the ball. It'll be fascinating. All right, final hour coming up here. We're going to take your calls coming up at 1:30. Before that, though, we'll talk about what caught our eye.